Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network, sponsored by TBILaw.com. For automatic reminders about this radio show and other great survivor events, sign up now for TBISN.org.
When Attorney Gordon Johnson speaks about recovery, he isn't talking about the amount of money a survivor gets from a lawsuit or settlement. He is talking about getting better from the brain injury. Find him on the web at TBILaw.com or call 800-992-9447.
And now, it is time for another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show. Hello, everybody. It is a cold and wet night in the heartland, that's for sure. After that beautiful weekend we had, kind of an Indian summer, I'm feeling a little stiff tonight. So in any case, I hope you guys are enjoying the last of the good weather in all of the places that are going to be looking for snow. Happy Halloween to everybody. I want to thank my Recovery Now sponsor, Lash Publishing. Their website is lapublishing.com, and they publish materials, all of the materials they publish, as a matter of fact, have to do with brain injury, and they're not only survivor stories, but things for professionals. Sorry, I'm trying to multitask and get this in the chat room as well. Everything that has to do with brain injury for professionals, to survivors, to caregivers, and everyone beyond. So thank you so much for their support. Also, Lash Publishing launched a new magazine called Brain Injury Journey back in April. And if you go to lapublishing.com, look over on the left side, go down a few, just a few lines, you'll see Brain Injury Journey. If you click on that, it'll take you to the magazine page, and you'll see a subscription price in front of you for the printed magazine, which comes out 6 times a year. And if you scroll down just a little bit, you'll see click here for the free, can't beat the price, online issues of Brain Injury Journey. And I've got to tell you, I've just read some fascinating articles, as well as writing one in this last issue. Oh, Lord, it's hard to be humble. The new issue should be coming out any day, folks, for October and November. So be looking for that, and if you sign up right now, you'll be able to get this past issue that was, let's see, where are we, August, September, and I did write an article for that, and then October, November will be coming out, so this would be a great time to sign up. Make sure to do that. Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week with a number of different hosts. Everybody bringing their own skill set to the table, a little bit of everything, and all of these live shows are immediately archived for on-demand listening afterward, so no one should ever need to be alone. I make a tongue-in-cheek joke on here from time to time that it took me 17 years writing a book and becoming a radio host to meet my first survivors. And that's pretty darn close to the truth, at least until the book came out at the beginning of 2012. So, you know, recovery can be a very isolating, polarizing experience, particularly if the medical professionals you're working with are, you know, big deal. It is a big deal, focusing on saving your life, but maybe, no pun intended, not giving you a heads up on some of the residuals you may encounter down the road. That's why I feel that peer-to-peer support is such an important element in a person's recovery. You can not only get that here on Brain Injury Radio, but if you check out the website, the number 4, P as in Paul, EER11.org, 4peer11.org, you'll see information on the peer-to-peer hotline, support hotline. Ultimately, it's going to be a 24/7 proposition. I think they have about 8 hours a day, 8 to 10 hours a day covered now, and we're looking for more volunteers. So if you're looking to put a little more of a sense of purpose in your life, looking to reach out and help another survivor, we're only looking for 4 hours a month of your time, and you do get trained thoroughly. So check it out. Think about it. Check out 4peer11.org for details. And they also have details there on the medical ID card. My guest tonight has had a very busy schedule with some, several different retreats and meetings, and I'm going to let her tell you a little bit about that. But my guest tonight is, and I very seldom get guests from my own home state, so this is really special on a number of levels, but Peggy Reiser became the executive director of the Brain Injury Association of Nebraska in July of 2013, so she's new to this post. Prior to that, she worked for the BIA Nebraska for 6 years as director of programs and services and as the director of the Nebraska Veterans Brain Injury Task Force Program. I'm going to type their website for you in the chat room in just a moment, but it's biane.org. Peggy's leadership has been the driving force in establishing the Nebraska Veterans Brain Injury Task Force, a group of representatives from civilian, military, and key government agencies working together to identify gaps in services for military members and veterans returning from war with brain injuries and/or PTSD. Peggy worked for 14 years on the TBI unit at Madonna Rehabilitation Hospital in Lincoln, Nebraska, where she helped patients and families identify community resources upon discharge from the hospital. This show is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. I introduce topics and survivors share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. Tune in, stop in, and call in. This is a We recovery program because it is in the We that we find the new me. We focus on the 4 A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. So, I think what I'm going to do is go ahead and bring Peggy. Well, no, I'm going to wait for just 1 minute. Before I bring Peggy on, and then I'll get her right on and let her do the talking. But, you know, when I got out of the hospital in 1995, I asked if there were any support groups, and we call this the silent epidemic because there's quite a few of us out there who have had a brain injury who look quote-unquote normal, talk quote-unquote normal, and we're released from the hospital after our episode, and at least in my case, just sent out into the universe to deal with it on my own. And when I asked the doctor's office if there was any type of a support group, they were not aware of one. When I started being a host about a year ago on Brain Injury Radio, I heard some new information that I hadn't heard. And in fairness to me, in 1995, we didn't all have a computer on our desk. And so information, the internet highway wasn't there, and the information wasn't as readily available. But one of the things I gleaned out of early shows is that I should probably look and see who the go-to neurosurgeon would be in town now, because mine had been a visiting surgeon, in case I were to ever have a problem again. And so last year, I made an appointment and reached out and parked my file, basically, at a new neurosurgeon's office. And I asked him, all these years later, 18 years later, is there any kind of a support group system or a place where people can go and meet other survivors and talk about some of these residuals that go on? And he said that I might check with the girls at the front desk. And I was like, really? What, the ones that make the appointments? And that was the end of that. I started hearing people on Brain Injury Radio talking about associations and alliances in their state. And so now we have Google. I Googled it and I found it. And it was prior to Peggy becoming the executive director, but I did drop a note, and I was interested in finding out what kind of things Brain Injury Association of Nebraska does, and hoped that the executive director might come on the show. And I never got a response. And I heard that from a lot of people around the country over the last year. And so you can imagine how excited I was when, first of all, a couple of stars lined up. My sponsor, Marilyn Lash, is in North Carolina. I'm in Nebraska. I never thought I would have the opportunity to meet her in person. But because of Peggy's foresight and one of her retreats that just recently went on a few weeks ago called Hope for the Home Front, Marshall Waddell, who I've interviewed on this program, as well as Marilyn Lash, came and helped present. And so I had the good fortune to not only meet Marilyn and Mardell, but also Peggy. And I must say, I felt very positive and renewed hope, I guess, when I met Peggy, because she's very knowledgeable and, from what I've seen now that I'm following the site, very proactive. And we had a discussion, and I talked to her about peer-to-peer support. And, you know, with a staff of one, two, I guess, you know, it's hard to cover all the bases in all the state. And I visited with Susan Connors, the National Brain Injury Association, who decided to post Brain Injury Radio on their website. And Peggy, yay for Nebraska, and Peggy also has a link to Brain Injury Radio under the support section of their website. And I am going to bring Peggy on right now, but the big challenge to all of you listening out there, and I'll bring it up again later in the show, is to go to your Brain Injury Association page, see if there's what kind of things they offer for peer-to-peer support, and if it looks like it might be a little limited, and even if it doesn't. There's a lot of people in your state that live in a rural area or perhaps are not able to drive or have a hard time with mobility, and Brain Injury Radio is a perfect resource for them. I never want to see anybody have to go 17 years again alone in a polarized situation in their recovery. And this is a good way to avoid that. I know support groups aren't for everyone, and I'm not saying that they are, but I do feel very strongly about people having the choice, and Peggy's helped me to do that for Nebraska. So welcome with that long introduction. I'm going to let you talk the whole rest of the hour, Peggy, but thank you so much for being here tonight. Folks, this is Peggy.
Well, thank you for having me, Kim. I don't know that I can talk for a whole hour or 45 minutes. I'm pretty good at if you ask me questions, I can answer things. But I do have to – I've been working with individuals for the last 20 years. I have my master's in social work and have – I myself don't have any family members or anybody that I know directly that – drew me to the world of brain injury. It was one of those things where my first job and somebody had asked me, it was a facility that worked with individuals with brain injury, and they said, do you have any experience with working with individuals with brain injury? And I said, no. And they go, well, we'll teach you. And I was just in grad school at the time. So I feel like I've kind of, in a sense, stumbled into the world, but once I walked into it or stumbled into it, I've been captured, and have a strong passion for helping those who are needing resources and information. I do think it's ironic that I had never heard of your program either. Feel like I take pride in trying to know what resources are out there so that I can link people to them, and I know that I have to just keep surrounding myself with really smart people, because there's no way I will never know everything that I need to know to help other individuals. So I thank you too, Kim, for being who you are, being persistent and not letting your first experience with reaching out to us at the association be your last experience. So thank you for your persistence.
Well, and that's one thing we have in common, too, because of that 17 years. I was surprised when Craig invited me to be a host, because I certainly don't know everything either, but I think that's one of the traits that is good when you're able to know that and surround yourself, use your skill set to help surround yourself with the experts who do, and that's what I see you doing. I'll start by asking you, just because it's where we are beginning, it's where we met, how did Hope for the Homefront go? Why don't you tell them a little bit about that program, because I'm going to lead into some other things that you are doing, but tell them a little bit about what Hope for the Homefront was, and let me know how it went. I met you guys before the event started and was fortunate to get to go and have lunch with Marilyn, and I haven't had an opportunity to talk to her since. So tell the folks a little bit about that event, because one of the things I want people to do out there, and I alluded to it, is to look at the page for their brain injury association in their state if they have one, and take a look at the kind of things that they're doing. And like I say, I was very motivated by all the things you guys are doing, and so I wanted to share that with our listeners, and they might be visiting with their associations about doing the same types of things.
Mm-hmm. Well, Hope for the Homefront started... I almost need to feel like I need to go back and tell just a little bit about our Veterans Brain Injury Task Force.
Please.
We have a Veterans Brain Injury Task Force that I started back in 2008 was when we first met. I claim to be a bit of a novice. I not only do I not have a family member with a brain injury, but then I also don't have any family members who are veterans, but I worked here in Nebraska long enough to know that, you know, there's gaps in services for civilians, there's probably gaps in services for the veterans and their families, too, in our state. And I had gotten invited to go to a meeting in D.C. where we talked about those gaps in services. We had written up some recommendations, things that states can do to help address, you know, those gaps in services. And I brought those recommendations back to our state and started knocking on doors at the VA. It felt like I was incredibly out of my element because, again, not coming from a military background, I was to the point, I was like, I don't even know what you guys call yourselves. Are you veterans? Are you soldiers? Are you, you know, what's
sure.
the proper term I use in working and addressing the amazing, heroic things you do every day? And with that, though, I found a lot of folks within our state that were willing. And what my first question to them is, okay, I don't know a lot about the military life, but I know a lot about brain injury. What do you know about brain injury, and are you interested in learning more? Would you be willing to work with us to kind of address some of these gaps in services? And I was incredibly impressed and pleased and felt warm and fuzzy in the reception I'd gotten by asking that ask. And we had put together our Veterans Brain Injury Task Force. As a task force, one of the things we said we really want to do is not meet just to meet. I mean, there's good things that happen when people meet just to meet, but if we're going to really address the gaps in services, we need action-oriented steps. And
yes.
So what we had done is we kind of took a look at what are the main topics we want to try and address. And as a group, we broke into subcommittees and just started tapping away at those. One of the areas that we focused on is we want to make sure that more community members understand what brain injury is. And with that, though, in working in the military world, I realized it's not just brain injury. There's so much crossover between brain injury and PTSD. So we opened our spectrum a little bit more, and we're saying, okay, what are we doing to address brain injury and PTSD and reintegration needs of veterans? And with that, we've put together here in our state, and we've done 11 of them across the state, but we put together what we call brain injury PTSD trainings. And we invite community providers, whether it's mental health practitioners, corrections officers, members of the VA, ministers, kind of whoever might care or work with veterans to come
right.
in and go through this training. The beautiful part of that, though, is, you know, not only are we educating them about what veterans need, but we've also gotten the opportunity to educate them about what civilians with brain injury are needing too. So it's a way to bring them in, but send them out with more knowledge and about just even the civilians and the other 36,000 Nebraskans they're working with that they maybe don't realize that have brain injury. And so so that was one of the components of the things that we said we wanted to do as a Veterans Task Force, educate community members. But this last year, we said not only do we want to educate community members, but we want to do something special for the families that are supporting those military members coming back with brain injury and then also PTSD. And I organized our annual brain injury conference, and I had called Marilyn because I know she's a wealth of connections, and I'm like, I need some ideas for somebody to come speak at our brain injury conference. And so she threw out a few ideas for me, and she goes, you know, I'm part of a group that's also working on working with the military, and I'd shared with her a little bit about what we're doing as a task force, and she goes, you know, it might be Marshall and I are doing this Hope for the Home Front, and so I learned a little bit more about that, and we actually had Marshall and Marilyn come do another radio show for us through the Kim Foundation, and the host and I listened to what they had to say, and like what Hope for the Home Front is they do retreats across the United States, and again, it's meant to be support for military women or women who are somehow connected to a military member. That could be a cousin, an aunt, and a grandmother, a girlfriend. It could even just, you know, be somebody that's the neighbor that provides care for, but you had to be female to come. And we decided we wanted to do this in Nebraska because, again, as a Veterans Task Force, that was one of our goals, was to try to reach out to family members. So we hosted this Hope for the Home Front. They also called it Beyond the Battle retreat in Omaha on October 4th through the 6th. And we weren't sure how many ladies we were going to get. My goal was to have 100. I think some thought that was pretty lofty, but we were able to get 70, and we were incredibly happy with 70 ladies. What that weekend retreat was about was providing some hope that they're not alone, that, you know, you might be dealing with this, with brain injury and PTSD, but you're certainly not the only one, and how can we get you connected so you're not feeling like you're just the only one sitting in your house dealing with it. I got a chance to learn more about brain injury and PTSD. The thing that I walked away with, as I sat in there and people would come up to me later and then all of a sudden were starting to ask questions about brain injury, they listened to Marilyn's presentation and they're like, we've been dealing with this for so long and never knew that's what it was, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, how can we get this diagnosed? How can we get the help that we need? And for some, it was just such an incredible aha. And I had a few ladies even say, oh, my goodness, this not only is affecting my military member, but this is, you know, and they would sit and explain another episode of another family member or somebody else that they knew that had hit their head or had a concussion, and they like, and they never put it all together. And they go, this is what we deal with. And so it was so neat as a planner, as an organizer, just to see, as you said earlier, sometimes just the stars align and people are just getting that aha. It was,
right.
I don't know if I answered your question, but
no, you did. It was a very good turnout, and certainly the families. But then, didn't you also have another, or having one coming up that was also for the veterans? You dealt with the families, but I saw a couple of different. You've got quite a few different programs that are coming up. I just read something about shaken baby syndrome, and we'll get to that in a few minutes, but it seemed to me that it didn't just after or before the home front that you had another program that was for the veterans themselves.
Well, actually, no. The veterans were welcome to come, but the brain injury PTSD trainings that I mentioned that was open to community providers,
that was what we
had our 11th one of those, and we held it in Bellevue, Nebraska. So those trainings have been incredibly successful. We have had over 1,000 Nebraskans attend those because they're interested in just learning more about it. You always hope that the work that you're doing has a positive effect on people, but I had this one lady, she goes, Peggy, it literally changed my life. Her son wasn't in the military, but the information she learned that day was powerful. She had realized that her son had had a brain injury and he had been in trouble with the law, and she goes, I was able to finally understand what it is that he was going through. It gave me the ability to dig in for more information and resources, and he had went to trial, and she goes, we were pretty sure he was going to go to jail for life, and she goes, but based on the information I learned, based on the things that I could then investigate more, she was able to get the right attorneys, the right counselors, the right testing done, that she goes, you know, to this day, he did not have to go to jail. He's living life productively. He's on probation, but he's living life productively. And, she goes, it's a life saved in her eyes. those are the things that you go, oh, this is why we're doing it. This is why
right.
It seems like so much work at the time, but we really do have the opportunity to change lives by giving people the information that they never had.
Well, and that is important. And the program that you're having that anybody interested parties, we'll call them, can come to, and something that you just talked about, you know, I've heard a lot of stories on here where people have been arrested or confronted by police officers who thought that they were drunk, either by the way they walked or by the way they talked. And let's say the situation went badly, and that lack of education about differentiating or at least being aware of brain injury, you know, I think a lot of times, and my cousin is a police officer, so I'm certainly all for those who protect and serve, but it's, you know, there's new information in every field, and I can imagine I wouldn't want to be a policeman, you know, what it's like, you know, especially on the weekends, you know, when you're seeing all the drugs and drug addicts and you're tired, and he actually works overnight in the roughest part of Omaha, and I can imagine, you know, walking up to cars or having people get out, which they're not supposed to, and you know, some unfortunate situations can come up, and I understand that now they're doing some training of police officers and sheriff's departments and different, what would I say, well, just police-related branches across the country to try to help them a little bit understanding brain injury, and so that they could mitigate some of those unfortunate events that have occurred. And I think that programs like the one that you have, that might be good, something good for the police officers. It might be something that you can tie into. I asked my cousin at a family member's birthday not long ago if Omaha was having training like that yet, and he said, no, not really, but it's coming. And so I'm not sure exactly what that means, if it means it's going to be coming through the department or, you know, if anything else, you might drop a line to the police agencies around the country, that, you know, I think, not the country, the state, I was going to say, because there's, you know, there's no point in reinventing the wheel. You know, there's a lot of ways that's another thing I've seen as a host, is a lot of different organizations reinventing the wheel by themselves. When working as a team, we kind of have the wheel. You know, it's just that you've got a spoke, and I've got a spoke, and they've got a spoke, and they've got a spoke, and somebody out there's got one we don't even know about. But by doing this type of thing and doing that networking, you know, we can maybe take the pieces that each of us have put together and put together the whole wheel, and then people don't have to keep starting over with the same thing or having competing enterprises, and it's more of a cooperative effort. I guess that's, you know, kind of what I'm looking for, is a cooperative effort through the community, and so I think that's really great what you're doing, and you know, as far as the veterans go, you know, to me, I do have some. My husband retired after 20 years in the Air Force, and my dad's a Marine, once a Marine, always a Marine, and I'm even a member of the Daughters of the Revolution, so my lineage goes back to military people all the way back to the Revolutionary War. So I think it's a good thing, you know, whether you're a veteran or not, and obviously veterans or people with traumatic brain injuries are probably going to have a little more understanding and maybe a little more of a trust basis with each other in the beginning. But the fact that someone is interested in hearing, because one of the other things that I hear a lot on the program from around the country is that people hear the term brain injury and make assumptions or scatter like rats, you know, mm-hmm. and they're just not interested in hearing about it. It's like if they get too close, it, you know, they might get it, or, you know, it might rub off or something, yeah. And so, you know, I think it's a good thing that this communication is out there. Now, one of the other things I was going to talk to you about is the definition. Now, you're called Brain Injury Association, and so within the definition of your brain injury, as I was reading it, would be traumatic brain injuries, acquired brain injuries, concussion, and now I saw that you had a pretty big banner on there on shaken baby syndrome. Mm-hmm. Has that been something that you've been working with for a long time, or is that as new to the website as I am, I guess?
Well, the reason shaken baby has come up is a variety of reasons, but in my years at Madonna, not only when I was there, our brain injury unit also had all of the pediatric patients, and many, many, many of the pediatric patients were shaken baby. And we had a family whose little girl was shaken in Texas, and they are videographers, and they started videotaping her progress, her story, their story, and they are just simply incredible people, incredible parents, and incredible spokespeople. And so, and their names are Tiffany and Brandon Verzal. And they would put together programs. Madonna realized their talent and would start utilizing them to help tell the patient's stories and use them for what they call their goal awards. And anyway, Tiffany and Brandon, after seeing what had happened to their little girl, they decided they wanted to be that family that went out and did provided information and education. And, of course, and they were at the time, their little girl was one of my patients, so I'd gotten to know them pretty well as a social worker. But I was also doing some of this, you know, more macro work or outreach and education work. So I had asked them if they would be willing, well, let me go back. They were wanting to do outreach and education to high schools, and one of their goals was to reach all of the high schools. And I'm like, that is an ambitious goal. It's a wonderful goal, but it's like house cleaning. You're never going to be done because you're going to get through Nebraska, and you could be doing this full time, and that's all you're doing is doing this education. So we decided maybe to make a tool to provide that education. And so they're putting together for us, we're contracting with them. We got some funding through our Nebraska Health and Human Services Injury Prevention. We also got Madonna Rehabilitation Hospital and Children's Hospital in Omaha to provide some funding for them to put together a documentary highlighting the stories of four Nebraska families who have been affected by shaken baby. Our goal with this documentary is that we can go out and share it with schools so that they can use it as an educational tool to share it with, you know, anybody that works with at-risk families to say, this is what happens. I think for me, it's like I'll pick up the paper and I'll read a story about a shaken baby. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, it drives me bonkers, because what they talk about is the person that caused the shaking, that did the shaking, that that's the story, is the person yes. shook. And it uh-huh. breaks my heart because it's like, that's just one piece of the story.
What about the baby?
What they're missing is the story of the child whose life is now changed forever. And so the title of our the program is called Forever Shaken. And so, again, we wanted just to highlight what it is that happens to these children, how long it takes to recover, if they recover. And it's, you know, not it's beyond the story of the person that shook. It's longer than the one article in the newspaper. It is forever shaken.
Right.
And so they're putting this documentary together, and it will be incredibly powerful. And if anybody wants access to it, we'll have it on our brain injury website once it's completed. But our plan is to provide it free to whoever wants it, whoever will watch it, and use it as an educational tool. Here within Nebraska, we're hoping we'll get it on like NET, which is our Nebraska Educational Television, hoping that they'll run it several times. But that's the reason why we're starting to talk about Shaken Baby, because I had an incredible family that said, let's do this. And it definitely affects a lot of children.
I hope that with my bad memory and your busy schedule, I'll keep checking back, but I hope you'll let me know when that comes out, because I'd like to promote it on the station. This show does go all over the United States and to 36 different countries, and I don't mm-hmm. think that there is any of those places that aren't concerned with Shaken Baby, and that would be a wonderful, and I applaud you on the progressive nature of your action in that area, and would like to help spread the word on that too. One of the things that I've told, and you know, there's been a couple places, and I'm not going to ask you about them, but there's been a couple places that I've talked to, QLI, Mosaic, just places that I've wandered into in my area, and talked to some people who gave me the time to talk and were very friendly and gave me the tour of the shiny hallways and promised to get back to me and never have. And, you know, I think after all the great things that they tell me that they're doing, I don't know why they wouldn't want to share it with the world. In fact, one of those organizations told me that they're the only, and that this is going to link back to your experience at the Madonna Rehabilitation Hospital. You know, one of the facilities here told me that their claim to fame, if you will, is that they're one of the few facilities in the United States that takes people under age 65. So it isn't like taking someone with a brain injury and putting them in a nursing home. This place actually looks comparable to UNO, which is our local branch of the University of Nebraska, which is a very nice, pristine campus. And that's what this place reminded me of, and at first glance, when you walk in, you would think you were walking into, you know, one of the local colleges, and then you look a little closer and know that that's not the case. But they told me they have people from all over the United States coming to the facility, and it was such a pitch, you know, hearing it of all of the great things. And it always baffles me, I guess, when people are taking pride in the context we were talking in about what they were doing, but they don't want to shout it out to the world. And, you know, that was one of the reasons why I was, you know, very proud and happy, you know, that you as a new executive director are being such a trailblazer by putting some of these programs into motion practically the day you're walking. And I know you were working there before, but, you know, from the day you've become the executive director, you put Brain Injury Radio's link on your website, you're doing these Hope for the Home Front, the education programs for anyone, any interested party, the Military Veterans Task Force. For one person, and I understand that to explain to people, and I don't know anything about anybody else's association except what I've heard when they've called in, but your association is comprised of you and your IT associate. Is that correct?
Yeah, Cindy Everett Christ. Her and I are a two-person show, and we both work from our homes, but we have a lot of passion. And yeah, we're small
and
ambition.
And
ambition. And I think what we've learned is the only way we can survive is by partnering with people. So, you know, when I talk about the Veterans Brain Injury Task Force, I mean, we're able to do great things, but I certainly couldn't do that without the people willing to help and be a part of it. I mean, there truly are. I think sometimes people just need someone to lead them. The way I sometimes tease them, I feel like I'm herding the cats. But, you know, I think if they, sometimes it's just the passion becomes infectious. And so that's what I'm hoping we're able to do. And we do a little, or we do a lot with the itty-bitty budget. But, you know, our goal is to be there. I mean, the reason we work so hard is we want Nebraskans to not only survive but thrive. And what can we do as an association to make that possible? And like, you know, we need people like you, Kim, who are doing your part and helping us spread the word. And again, we're only as smart as those around us. So.
Yeah, hear, hear to that. One of the things I was going to just read off of your site for a moment is a statewide survey conducted in 2010 highlights the health challenges and barriers to services and support for individuals who have experienced traumatic brain injuries. Those who responded to the survey reported significant adverse changes to their lives resulting from a brain injury, most citing changes to their physical health, emotional well-being, and ability to earn an income. They also reported experiencing barriers that prevented or limited access to needed services and supports, such as a lack of financial resources, geographic and transportation issues, and limited awareness of brain injury among professionals. Boy, you can say that underscored. Among the most important needs identified were cognitive training, counseling, and behavioral support to address problems that occur daily as a result of an injury. Problems affecting the individual who experienced a brain injury as well as their families. And again, for that program, the program that you have that train professionals and others how to deal. You know, one of the things that I say in my own circumstance is that nobody gave me or my family a handbook, you know, when we left the hospital that day, and we were clueless. There wasn't any guidance out there. So, you know, I think the fact I really want to be instrumental in helping spread the word of these training programs that you have going on, because again, one of the biggest complaints that I've heard, couple different complaints, but one of the bigger complaints I've heard from the audience around the country is that they're so frustrated by the lack of follow-up support they get from the traditional medical field. And I don't mean to paint that with a broad brush. I know there's exceptions to that rule, but I also know that until recently, when the two you know, large groups, the veterans in the NFL got involved, that people in medical school probably now, but certainly quite a bit up to now, were getting very little education on brain injury and the after effects of brain injury. So, you know, the fact that you're offering these courses for them, I'd like to help, you know, again, another challenge. I'm throwing out a couple challenges to our listeners tonight. One is to check out what's going on with your own association, Allowance Foundation, see what it is that they're doing to educate and advocate, and also what they have to offer in the way of peer-to-peer support. But these training courses for professionals, if one of our biggest complaints is that the professionals aren't getting it in medical school, if a place like our associations are providing this information and they're going to be working with us, you know, as their demographic of patients, then I would think that they would care to get some of this education that you're providing. So again, I'm really happy to know that Nebraska is doing that. And then another thing I was going to read, because I thought these were interesting, and of course this is unique to Nebraska, but it might pique your interest out there around the rest of the country and the rest of the world to know some of the facts, because I know there's a lot of people out there like me that had their injuries a long time ago who are clueless, like I was clueless, because there wasn't anyone to ask. You know, there wasn't those resources out there. And one of the things that I say is, you know, especially in the beginning when your bell's been rung, you know, you're doing all you can to try to piece yourself back together and figure out what the heck just happened. I was real familiar with the old me. Now I got some new things going on, and the first thing I'm going to do is deny and want to, you know, go back to try to fight to get back to the old me. But when I find out that I'm going to have to adapt into the new me, you know, then it really helps to have some guidance as to how you do that. And so one of the things in that survey I referred to earlier about Nebraska, and you might check it out in your own state or country, is every day in Nebraska at least one person dies from a traumatic brain injury. Three people are hospitalized, and over 24 people a day visit the emergency department because of TBI. More than 300,000 people have suffered a brain injury, including concussions, and more than 36,527 individuals live with a disability caused by a traumatic brain injury. The monetary cost associated with TBIs in Nebraska was over $413 million in 2009. This estimate includes both fatal and non-fatal injuries and medical costs and productivity losses. It is estimated that the lifetime costs per individual with a brain injury were, for a mild brain injury, $85,000, a moderate brain injury, $941,000, and a severe brain injury, $3 million. In the last 5 years, there has been a steady increase in emergency department visits, hospitalizations, and death caused by a traumatic brain injury, and emergency visits for brain injury in Nebraska are higher than the national average. Why do you think that is?
I'm not sure why it's higher than the national average. I can't venture a guess, but one of the things I'm guessing, Kim, is even since that was done in 2013, and we, and like most states, passed a sports concussion law.
Good. Talk about that.
I'm guessing those numbers are even higher. Yeah, here in Nebraska in 2012, our concussion, our youth sports concussion bill passed. And what that essentially means is that for children, in our state, it's kids 19 and younger, they're playing in youth sports. If there's a doubt, if there's a suspicion that they had a concussion, they are to be pulled out of the game and not returned back until a medical professional signs off and says it's okay to do that. And we are also, part of the law stated that information and education had to be made available to coaches and to parents about concussion. What we're finding is that that bill did a really nice job starting to create concussion awareness, but we did a survey. We partnered with a variety of other injury prevention folks in the state, did some concussion surveys, or surveys of coaches, athletic trainer, or athletic directors, and kids who were identified as having a concussion. We did surveys of them since the law was put in place, and we are finding we have a long ways to go because there's still a lot of kids that are playing with concussions. And because of that, similar to what I did with our Veterans Brain Injury Task Force, we are now putting together a sports concussion coalition is what we're calling it. We're having our first meeting in November on the 20th. But we're pulling together people that work with youth, athletic trainers, anybody that might have their finger or pulse on what's going on with concussions in the state. We're inviting them to come to a meeting because what we're seeing is that there's a lot of different groups that are working on concussion awareness, which is great and should be applauded. However, I think everyone's kind of doing their own thing. And so, you know, again, the power of collective work. And so what we're doing is we're bringing those folks together so that we can learn from each other, what each other's doing. And one of the bigger components we're trying to tackle here in Nebraska, and I know other states are working on this too, is there's one, it's incredibly important to pull these kids from play if there's a concussion, because it's just the impact of that second concussion can just be life-altering, if not life-threatening. And so so that's one piece of it, but probably equally as important in some ways is if these kids have concussion, what's the return to learn plan? Because if they're not doing well, you know, they're not allowed to go back on the field, which is, you know, until they're cleared to do so. But when they go into the classroom with headaches or vision problems or, you know, noise is distracting to them or light is too powerful, they simply can't concentrate and learn. And so what we're trying to do is educate the schools, the parents, and just the general public that you got to come up with a plan to return to learn in addition to return to play. And there's some folks that are doing some really great work with that in our state. There's what we're trying to promote is schools to put together concussion management teams. There's one school in here in Lincoln that is just doing an outstanding job, and actually it's being highlighted. The work they're doing was highlighted in the Omaha World Herald today, so if you want to learn a little bit more about it, check out the Omaha World Herald and learn a little bit more about Crystal, as one of the athletic trainers at Southwest High School in Lincoln. But, youth concussion is an important component of another thing that we're trying to educate people about. And, again, as a brain injury association, I'm like, if we've got veterans and sports concussion, it's everywhere. You don't turn on a Saturday afternoon or Sunday game, and you don't hear something about concussion. You know, as a brain injury association executive director, if we don't get on this bandwagon and do education about brain injury, there has never been a better time ever that I'm aware of to talk about brain injury and spread awareness, because it's everywhere in the media. And so it's, you know, grabbing onto those opportunities to talk about sports concussion, grabbing on those opportunities to talk about veterans. And my hope and my prayer is that that translates into people understanding and not being as afraid of it, and starting to pay attention to what that means for those 36,000 Nebraskans who've lived with it for years on end. So people just become, you know, more sensitive, more cognizant of what it is about, and not to be afraid of it, but to want to learn more about it. So, doing things like our Veterans Brain Injury Task Force, doing things like our Concussion Coalition, I think are great opportunities to, not only as an association, our staff of two, to do some really great things, but to bring in other partners and help them helping us spread that awareness and that education.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so, too. Well, I promised you that I would only keep you an hour tonight, and it looks like we just have one person who has a question. So if you can bear with me for a moment, we'll see what this question or comment might be. I might also tell you folks out there listening, if you have any questions, 424-243-9540 is the number you call into. When Peggy goes in a few minutes, we're going to have open mic and some great new indie music, as well as a very cool new indie musician, and talk about what's on your mind tonight. So area code 518, did you have a question or comment for Peggy?
This is Brent Fuse, the protocol guy from New York.
Hi, Brent. Welcome. In
fact,
I'm going to connect her with you. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I know, it sounds that way. Well, you made a comment about, you know, people leaving the emergency rooms with no type of leadership or guidance, and that's part of what this protocol is going to take care of. You know, it's going to help emergency workers do the right thing to get people to the right hospital. It's going to help the emergency room people to do the right testing and procedures in the right order and not to be dismissive, so we don't get so many people that are either underdiagnosed or completely not diagnosed at all, which is, you know, one of the major problems with brain injury. We have so many people running around that never get diagnosed.
Right, and I was misdiagnosed, so I'm very happy about that. And, Brent, I did talk to Peggy a lot about you, and I just need to get a hold of that protocol. I know Craig is putting up a site that's going to be brainprotocol.org. Is that right? Does that sound right to you?
BrainInjuryProtocol.org, I believe, is going to be that one.
Okay.
And then I think DJ set up on Facebook, where if you go to Facebook and type in Brain Injury Protocol, supposedly it'll bring it up. I've had trouble bringing it up, but I don't know if it will work now or not. But, you know, if it's not working, it will be corrected. And,
yeah, either way, I'll either get the PDF from you. I have it, but knowing
right.
me, it's the way my mind is I have it saved somewhere safe in my computer, but trying to locate it there and just getting a hold of you, Peggy and I did talk extensively about that, and she's very interested in me getting her a copy of that. So I'm glad that
right.
you called in tonight so you guys could at least hear each other's voices.
Let me make another comment, and then also, you know, you guys are talking about a lot of educational-related things.
Mm-hmm.
I've mentioned this on the air before on DJ's show a few times. Not only did I develop the protocol, that's the first item in a five-segment thing that I'm developing that I'm going to try to get New York State to try to start to absorb after the protocol, because it's been, you know, a multi-year battle just to get them to absorb even one page of this protocol, let alone anything, you know, more comprehensive, which really needs to be done. I'm developing five other things that are really going to change the entire way that brain injury is handled, not only by medical workers, but also by how state health departments will somewhat deal with it, how brain injury associations, how support groups will function better, ways of developing the support groups better, which, as you guys know, is really one of the ways to get good help to people, you know, because there's nobody to lead you through this. And eventually the idea is to give every state would have the information that I'm generating so then they can use it as a baseline and tailor it to their specific area and needs and then add to it and refine it and then share it with all the rest of the support groups in the country. So then all this information that was originally given to them will then be made better and better and better by everybody. And then everybody in the country will operate on the same basis in a way too. You know?
Yes.
And even someone in the Brain Injury Association of America said it sounded like this stuff should be distributed nationwide, but right now it's in the early developmental stages, you know? And once we get states to start adopting the protocol, that's the first step, and then after that it's going to be this five-pronged approach of re-managing and re-dealing with the whole situation. You know, so it would really lend a lot. A lot of the educational things you're talking about would be covered under what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and once I get it developed, I can share it with everybody, and you'll see how it would fit into all your thoughts and ideas.
Yeah, I think that's
wonderful.
Great.
Yeah,
absolutely,
and like I said,
Brent.
It really should be a national plan. And like I said, if everybody operates more on the same page, you know, and then there would be ways of interlinking everyone with either computer and or, you know, social media, et cetera, where everybody could share the same information throughout the United States, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And because,
right.
Once again, there's no roadmap or guidebook for this. This is going to be exactly that.
I think so, too. And, Brent, I think that's a point well taken. We're saying the same thing, and I'm including the protocol in it. But that's why I'm challenging, and I'll add that now that you called. And I would have, but memory, and I was focusing on Peggy. But, you know, just about every state, I think, has an association, an alliance, a foundation, a something working out there, and that's why I was throwing out the challenge tonight. And I'll add not only peer-to-peer support but protocol, and you can contact Brent, you can contact Brain Injury Radio, you can contact me at inaflash.org under contact author, and get a hold of your state organizations, because one of the fastest ways we can spread this information around the country is by having our own who have been victim of these situations out there being proactive. You know, I've heard calls that have come in here about people having negative things to say about the associations and about the protocols. I mean, I do. I was misdiagnosed for 24 hours and was nearly killed by my doctor. But, you know, the point of the matter is, you know, that's old news now. My horse went out of the barn back in 1995. What I want for the future is for those situations to not be replicated. And by doing the kind of work Peggy's doing and what you're doing, Brent, what we're doing at Brain Injury Radio, and all of us working together and turning a new page of cooperation instead of headbutting and competition, I think it's going to serve our whole community and all of us that are working very hard in this community to help other survivors and to make more survivors. With you being a first responder, Brent, I know that you probably saw some people that didn't get the opportunity to make it to being a survivor. And of course, that's what we want to do is get a lot more survivors so that they have the opportunity to become thrivers. So I appreciate what both of you are doing.
Right, and I had mentioned on DJ's show that I recently saw Gabby Giffords and her husband up in my area of New York State, and I actually got close enough to them, even with bodyguards, where I could give them a protocol, and I'm hoping that she will somehow get involved with this to help this more become a national type situation.
Good for you. And, you know, John Kerry and Ben Nelson are from Nebraska. So if you want to send that my way. And the other thing I might mention is that for some of the work that they've been doing, and it hasn't been official yet, but the National Daughters of the Revolution are going to be presenting the Nebraska Brain Injury Association with a national award for outstanding community service. And I had the opportunity to have lunch with the governor's wife. And so I'd like to get a copy of your protocol for the next time I'll be seeing her.
Don't
you think? And I'm going to be meeting her for the Martha Washington Tea Party, honey, and I think that's about a really nice way to slide that protocol over to Madam Governor. Is that a tea party, don't you?
I think that'd be perfect.
Okay. Yeah, and Peggy's going to be there, too.
And I just want to make a comment. Good night to both of you.
Thank you for calling in.
Yes, thank you. Goodbye.
You bet.
Bye.
Oops, I almost hung up on you, Peggy. Okay. Well, Peggy, I promised you an hour. I know you've got a busy day going on tomorrow, but I want to thank you so much for coming on the show tonight and sharing what you did and giving me the opportunity to tout some of the things that Nebraska is doing. If you guys want to check out the website, it's www.biane, kind of like Diane, but with a B, biane.org. Look at what Nebraska is doing, and then I challenge you to look at your own state associations or alliances. Talk to them about a brain injury radio link to help with the peer-to-peer support, and tell them that National and Nebraska are doing it, and you don't want to see them dragging their feet behind behind those states, especially when you got a new executive director in Nebraska doing it. Then they want to get right on that wagon and not be outdone. So thank you so much for coming on tonight, Peggy, and sharing what you're doing. And I look forward to having a cooperative and continuing relationship with you.
Well, thank you, Kim. I really do appreciate all the work you're doing and the opportunity you've given us. It is kind of fun knowing that you're in the same state. And
I know. That's how I felt about you. I didn't know anybody like that.
Well, it's just, you know, I think God has plans, and here we are. So thank you for all you're doing. And certainly, if you ever have opportunities to have us back, I'd love to keep you abreast of all the other things that we'll be continuing to dream of and do in the future. And also, I know I have a whole bunch of other ideas of speakers for you. So when Shaken Baby is put together, I'm guessing that Tiffany or Brandon Verzal would be a great folks to have on your show just to talk with you more about their project, too. So, anyway.
Oh, good, and I appreciate that. And when you're up in Omaha, give me a call, and we'll go to lunch this time.
Well, sounds good. Sounds wonderful. Well, thank you, and everyone have a good night.
Okay, thanks, Peggy. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, everybody, that was Peggy Reiser, the new executive director of the Nebraska Brain Injury Association. And I'm going to close out her segment the way that I close out a lot of segments, and then we're going to go into open mic, and I'm going to play some music. Certainly call in with anything that might be on your mind, whether it's about your association, alliance, foundation, anything like that, or just anything that's on your mind tonight as it relates to your brain injury. I'll talk to you a little bit about what's been on my mind today when we come back from the break, but here's something that I believe we all have, And this is by Leah West. Make sure to check out her website, LEAHWEST.com, LeahWest.com, and Guardian Angel. Grab a hot drink if you're here in the Midwest, and a cold drink if you're fortunate enough to be somewhere that's still warm, and I'll see you in 4 minutes and 45 seconds. This is Guardian Angel.
Thank you.
Again, that was Guardian Angel by Leah West. Since we're on the subject, I did find a piece while I was on their website, and then I'm going to go on to play some more music. Again, if you want to call in and talk tonight, the number is 424-243-9540. Again, 424-243-9540. I've got a couple interesting music stories, one that blew me away, that I'm going to share with you, and I'll get to that in just a few minutes. But since we're called Brain Injury Radio, and in light of the subject we just had, you know, people are starting to learn, as a lot of us know who hang out here, we've known about brain injury for a long time, whether we knew or not, meaning we might not have known what to expect, and we just experienced it, and so we learned by experience, or, you know, possibly there was someone out there, or there was someone out there who actually was able to give us some guidance. And I hear that less than I hear the story that I have. But for those new listeners out there, we call this the silent epidemic. Obviously, when people have symptoms that are visible, it's a little easier for you to guess that a person might have some challenges that they're working with. But for the silent epidemic crew, of which I'm one, here's a piece called The Consequences of Brain Injury. And it's broken down into three categories: cognitive consequences, physical consequences, and emotional consequences. And this may be another reason you'll want to call in. Under cognitive consequences, they can include short-term memory loss or long-term memory loss, slowed ability to process information, trouble concentrating or paying attention for periods of time, difficulty keeping up with a conversation, other communication difficulties such as word finding problems, spatial disorientation, organizational problems, and impaired judgment, unable to do more than one thing at a time, a lack of initiating activities or, once started, difficulty in completing tasks without reminders. Interesting. That unable to do more than one thing at a time, I think, is kind of what I tend to call full basket syndrome. And what was the other thing on here about things like bright lights and difficulty keeping up with multiple conversations and things like that, and flashing lights and like the coins dropping and all the buzz of noise in the casino. And a couple weeks ago, some of you heard me talk about the fact that I hadn't been to a concert and got the good news. The sweet news of my husband is that we went and saw Keith Urban. There were 10,000 people in the convention center, and I was feeling really uncomfortable with all of the flashing lights, the buzz of the people talking, jumping around, dancing around. It was just too chaotic. And I was sitting there thinking about it as I was watching the young lady next to me tossing her beer out of the glass as she was dancing. I remember being in that place once, you know, going to concerts all the time and dancing around up in the, you know, and that's the funny thing too, the price of seats these days, and nobody even sits in them, they stand up the whole time. But I sat there reminiscing about the old days when I was sitting in her chair, and here I was that night, a couple weeks ago, sitting in my chair, And I needed to leave early. It was really making me not feel very good and feel claustrophobic. And my vision was kind of, I kept blinking and I didn't know if it was the flashing lights or exactly what it was. And I was kind of just staring off into space, you know, for a while there, and just really felt like I needed to leave early. And I think that's what I call sensory overload. And so that would probably fall in this list somewhere of cognitive consequences. The next category was physical consequences can include seizures of all types, muscle spasticity, what was that they were saying about having problem finding the word, double vision or low vision, even blindness, loss of smell or taste, speech impairments such as slow or slurred speech, headaches or migraines, fatigue, increased need for sleep, and balance problems. Now, on that speech impairment, it says such as slowed or slurred speech. I use acronyms on my show quite a bit, and one of the acronyms I use most is HALT, which stands for hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. And if I have any one or combination of those things going on, then I notice my speech start to slur and my ability to grasp the right word. And some of the things that they're talking about on the list so far that I've read to you, the volume gets turned up on those residuals when I'm hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. Also, if I'm overstressed or emotionally kilter, then any one or combination of these symptoms is going to be more pronounced and will be more noticeable than it would be at other times. And in the old days, I used to make excuses and wasn't completely honest about where that was coming from. I don't think in the beginning that I was really sure where it was coming from. And then as it started to dawn on me that that's what was happening, I was embarrassed. And I think one of the things we were talking about last night on Les Paul's show and we've talked about on other shows is what an unfortunate place it is to be, that you've already been through hell on wheels with some kind of a brain incident, and then you have to go through feelings of guilt or shame or somehow find fault or feel apologetic for having these things that I'm reading to you, when the brain incident was generally of no fault of your own, yet it does seem to be a very common psychological phenomena that we all go through these feelings, which is pretty wild. Obviously, you know, at 35 years old when I got up and was having a normal day at the top of my game, financially, physically, every other way, and by early afternoon, my life was going to change forever. I don't know. I lost my point, so I'm just going to move on. Emotional consequences can include increased anxiety, depression and mood swings, impulsive behavior, more easily agitated, egocentric behaviors, such as difficulty seeing how our behaviors can affect others. So, For those of you out there who weren't quite sure, Peggy alluded to the fact that after that Hope for the Home front, people came up to her and they had no idea. They knew there were some issues with some people in their lives, but they had no idea where those issues were coming from. And just by education that she was giving out in her seminar, and hopefully education that we're giving out on our radio program, people will come to understand and be educated about what a brain injury truly is. We have a lot of stories on here where the hosts and the guests are telling their personal stories, and those are wonderful to hear, but sometimes I think it's good to drop back. You know, I know us survivors and the caregivers kind of take it for granted because we've lived with these things for a long time, and we don't always know when we're talking on these programs that there's newcomers out there like I was for 17 years, real newcomers out there, and family members, new caregivers out there, and people who are just interested parties who hear the word brain injury and they take it at its most literal level, that someone has had a blow to the head or a car accident or an aneurysm or an AVM or a tumor, and what the immediate treatment was, the life-saving treatment, but they very seldom know about this list of residuals I just read to you. And so if you're interested in a copy of these and you want to share them with some interested parties in your life, a couple ways you can get this list. You can ask me for it, and I'll email it to you, or it is listed, posted, all kinds of places. But this particular short and to the point list is I got off of my guest's website, which is www.BIANE.com, and that stands for Brain Injury Association of Nebraska. So in any case, I find it a good, concise list. And in fact, I think I'm going to take this to my therapist tomorrow because I know we talk around a lot of these bullet points, but I'm not sure that anyone has ever handed them these bullet points. And in fact, that's another challenge. I think I've thrown out three challenges tonight to those of you that are listening out there. And one of those challenges is to go to your own association, see what they're doing about peer support, and suggest that they post Brain Injury Radio on their website as a way to inform the people that they're serving, that there is a peer-to-peer support vehicle available out there for everybody, caregivers and people who have suffered a brain injury, whether or not they have a support group right there in their city. There's an awful lot of people out there who are in rural areas, or they have no mobility, they're not able to drive, and Brain Injury Radio is a very viable means of peer-to-peer support. Pardon me. And also are the number 4, P as in Paul, EER, 4peer11.org, the support line. But I think particularly Brain Injury Radio, because you get great information and it is interactive between the chat room and the chance to call in and talk. I know I've learned more in the last year than I learned in the last 18 years about brain injury, and I'm very grateful that we have so many people participating and more all the time. This is another good time to mention that Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, same time, same number, and that we have added a new platform 2 hours before we're on. And we originals, actually, our founder is Craig Cecilia. As I understand it, he did Brain Injury Radio on his own for about 2 years on Monday nights. And he built, brought together a lot of people who had suffered brain injuries because there was a vast gaping hole of a need out there. And with God's grace, a lot of people found him and plugged into Brain Injury Radio. And then over a year ago, he expanded it to 7 nights a week, and that's when the rest of us came on board. And so we've been here a little bit over a year now with our programs 7 nights a week. And in the last couple of months, we've added, oh, and I'm meaning to say that our original block of shows are on at 7 o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock Central, I mean, I'm sorry, 8 o'clock Mountain, 9 o'clock Central, and 10 o'clock Eastern time. And now in the last couple of months, we've added actually about an hour and a half to an hour and 45-minute segments of new programs with a little broader basis of disability. And we still have a few slots to fill, but I'm really excited about the people that we have on already. And Kim Lane is one of the hosts, and she's affiliated with the NECRO Foundation. They talk about aneurysms and AVMs. On Wednesday, we have Shaken Not Stirred with Dr. Robert Coover, and it is a show on Parkinson's disease. Lori Fattell, now Dr. Bob is on the 1st, 3rd, and 5th Wednesday at 5 o'clock Pacific. And on the 2nd and 4th is Lori Fattell, who does The Science of Happiness, which is a wonderful program about positive attitude through recovery and growth. On Thursdays, we have a show on independent living and have two of the pioneers in the independent living movement, Collins and Constance Miller. And our own Tuesday night dream catcher in this segment, Les Paul, is doing a second show because he works in an independent living center. And that show in the earlier segment was his brainchild. And so he's on, I think, the 3rd week. And then on the 4th week, all of those hosts can Constance, Les Paul, and perhaps others in that field get together and have a show. And Dr. Kelly Orr on Monday night at 5 o'clock has a show on caregiving. And he has a very interesting story, but we felt that to round out our platform that there were some shows we thought were important, and caregiving is one of them. And we have another show, trying to think of who it is, but another show that will be coming up on caregiving. And I did get also confirmation from Dr. David Nielsen, who was a guest on my show not too long ago. He's a neuropsychologist who practiced with children with traumatic brain injuries and their families for 20 years. And then in the last couple of years, had a brain injury of his own. And he's finding that how he was groomed as a doctor and how he practiced, now that he's a survivor, there's a little bit of difference in his outlook, and it's going to be neat. He's only a year out. from his injury, so he's still learning about the new me, and will be going through that evolution with us, as well as catering to youth. And I believe that the convention that Craig and Les Paul were just at in Oklahoma, they were talking to some youth, and we're probably going to have a youth program in that earlier platform for younger people who are always welcome at any of the shows, but might like to interface with people more their age. And so we're going to be having a program like that too. So we're really excited about the expansion around here, and so make sure to tune in and listen to those new shows. I think when people started logging in looking for our original platform that's been going on the last year, some of you were wondering where we went, because you were seeing the show pages for these new earlier shows and not seeing ours. And I had people ask me if we got replaced, if we changed our platform, if we quit having the later shows and we're now doing earlier shows. And no, that's not the case. We old salts are still here. But the way it's situated right now, and we're going to be having a new studio pretty soon, so all bets will be off and we'll have to reteach the hosts and the listeners. But right now, if you do try to pull up one of our later shows and you see the earlier show on braininjuryradio.com, there's a little red arrow at the bottom of the program page, and if you click that, it'll just flip the page and show you our show. So we still are there. We're just the page under the newer shows. And I see I have a couple hands up in the chat room, and I will be with you guys very shortly. And we've got quite a bit of time to talk. We've got about an hour and a half left, but I wanted to do two things, and then I will let everybody on who's interested, again, call 424-243-9540. I had a couple things I wanted to report on, having to do with music, again, for just a minute. Several of you know who follow my Facebook page, and I've put a couple on Brain Injury Radio, but most of them I put on my In a Flash page, because I know that the hosts are posting their programs on Brain Injury Radio. At least we all should be. I've been very fortunate to have some wonderful indie musicians. When I decided, one of the things Craig has allowed us to do as hosts is do our own thing. He didn't dictate how our program should be to us. He allowed us the freedom and the creativity to do the shows as we wanted to. And some nights for me, I do topics, and we'll do the show myself, and I'll pick a topic that's been on my mind and talk about it and invite the callers to call in. Most of the time lately, I've been doing interviews, several military veteran interviews, two recently Vietnam veterans, and also a couple of Afghanistan, Iraq veterans, and also a number of authors. And then what I decided, because I'm probably not going to find as many guests that are going to be able to talk for 3 hours, especially with the time zone difference, I feel like music is very therapeutic. And I know that our founder is very interested in music, is a musician himself, and has found it therapeutic, cathartic. And our Tuesday host, Les Paul, same thing. He's big into the Music Academy and believes that music is very cathartic. And I do too. So I decided for the second part of my show, I was going to go on a quest. I was an indie author, and I was going to go out and find independent musicians willing to share their music. And I'm fortunate that I've built a little stable here, I think, of about 20, 25 independent musicians who sell, who, not sell, excuse me, share their music with me and you. And interestingly, in the beginning, I cast the net and I got the first six musicians, and a couple of them were from my area, and they were people that I knew. One of those people I talk about a lot because he's, well, I'll get to that. One of those people, his name is John Cruz, and about 15 years ago, is when I discovered him, and I would listen to him play. The first time was in a restaurant that I was in, and I was back in the restaurant part, and I heard this song playing all of a sudden out in the front where the bar was, and I kind of got up in mid-sentence and walked out and looked up at this guy, and I've got very eclectic and wide taste in music, so if you ever hear a song you don't like me playing on this show, stick around because I have about every genre you can get. But in any case, I looked up at John, and he was the archetype of the blues singer. Looked kind of road hard and put up wet, had his Jack and Coke in front of him, blowing that harmonica like there was no tomorrow, and an outstanding voice and ability to play the guitar. And the song he was singing just really got to me. And that was before I knew the story behind it or him. And again, this was about 15 years ago. And come to find out, the song I'm going to play for you in a minute was as a result of the fact that his wife was brutally murdered. And John raised their only child daughter, Lindsay, who when I first met her was just a kid. Now I got the opportunity to meet her a couple weeks ago when I got to see John play. She's 28 years old now and has three kids of her own. But when I got a hold of John after a decade of not seeing him, I just hadn't been out clubbing and their band had broken up. I got married. You know, people kind of go down different paths. But when I knew I wanted music, I really wanted his song because it's kind of germane to what we're doing here. You know, you talk, well, you'll find this part out yourself. But in any case, it was like a needle in a haystack. I finally found him. And out of that first six musicians that I found, strictly looking for their music, two of them had a tie to brain injury. And one of them is a different artist I'll talk to you about a little bit later. But one of them was John. And interestingly, that decade I didn't see him, when I did get a hold of him, about a month and a half before, he had been diagnosed with an inoperable brain tumor on his brain stem. And he was going to be going through 38 radiation treatments, not with the hope of getting rid of it or probably even shrinking it, but with the hope of keeping it from growing. And as most of you know, the brain stem is kind of command central for the brain. And I've asked you before to send up some prayers for John, and he did get the results back of those 38 radiation treatments, and it did what it's supposed to. His tumor hasn't grown so far. He'll be getting screened every 6 months. It didn't shrink, but it didn't grow either. And what I want to do for you now is play that song from 15 years ago when I first met him, And then I'm going to tell you a really incredible story about a song I heard him play 2 weeks ago and what came out of that. And I think you'll think that that's a pretty interesting story. But again, I'm going to play you this song by John Cruise. And I think a lot of you will be able to relate. And while you are, you know, he's had a lot of hardship in his life. And right now, I'm praying that that tumor doesn't grow. He's written a lot of new music as he's been going through this experience. And I'm praying he's got the opportunity to have that new CD come to fruition when he's feeling better and stronger. In fact, he's going to be a guest on my show, and it's been lined up a couple of times, but he just hasn't felt up to it on those nights. And so soon, I'm hoping in the next few weeks, you guys will get to meet him in person. But I'm going to play you the song that got me hooked, and that is John Cruise, and the song is called Palm of Your Hand.
Palm of your hand, like a tree.
That was John Cruise, everybody, with Palm of Your Hand. And that was a song that he dedicated to his wife after he lost her. John writes 99% of his music, if you guys will bear with me for just one more minute, couple more minutes. He writes 99% of his own music, but every now and then he sings something, somebody else's song. And when I had the opportunity, my husband and I, to go out a couple of weeks ago and hear him, I hadn't heard him in years, and he was just doing acoustic. It was him playing the guitar and the harmonica and singing, and his buddy Bucky McCann doing the harmony and playing another guitar. And then out in the audience, as often happens with bands, was John, no longer has a band right now, but it was John Cruise Blues back in the day when I met him. And he had Guitar George, who was great on the electric guitar. And he had George come up, and they did a song, and it actually, I had a tear or two dropping down my cheek as I heard him sing it. You can tell with the passion in his voice. And I went up and I said, "Wow, did you write that one?" And he said, no, that's one I didn't write. And he wasn't sure who did. He did a beautiful job on the song, but I did some checking around, and there's a couple artists that sing this song, but I found the person who actually wrote it and owns the master rights on it. And this is something really interesting because, you know, sometimes when you try to get a hold of people that are big in their industry, I've heard a lot of talk the last couple nights about Oprah, and it's not like you're going to give her a call and leave a while you were out message and she's going to be returning it, you know. So I fully wasn't expecting when I wrote a note to this man that I would hear from him, but by golly, I get blessed in so many ways and then like to pass it on. But the man who wrote the song I'm going to play now, and then I promise you, then I am opening the mics. But they were just kind of related because I just heard John sing it. And the song is actually by Gary Nicholson. Gary Nicholson is one of Nashville's most prolific and highly regarded songwriters. He's worked with most of country's stalwarts, as well as the contemporary generation of stars. He boasts credits on albums by Reba McEntire, the Dixie Chicks, George Jones, Montgomery Gentry, Garth Brooks, The Mavericks, Emmylou Harris, Ringo Starr, Willie Nelson, Bonnie Raitt, Billy Ray Cyrus, Waylon Jennings, Patti Loveless, Tanya Tucker, Conway Twitty, Susie Bogus, Keith Whiteley, to name a few. He's also worked in other popular musical fields ranging from pop to R&B and blues. His clients including Dave Edmonds, John Mayall, Neil Diamond, and B.B. King. Nicholson began writing after moving to Los Angeles in his teens, joining a band playing Flying Burrito Brothers songs. When Graham Parsons traveled through Texas, he befriended Nicholson, leading to a small publishing deal in Los Angeles. He continued writing for his own band in a vein he described as pre-Eagles country rock. His breakthrough came in 1980 when Mickey Gilley sang his jukebox argument in the movie Urban Cowboy. Gary Nicholson has won 2 Grammys as well as numerous other awards, and he is a singer, songwriter, and producer. And when I got a hold of him to ask him if I could play this song, I was telling him John's story, how I heard his song, by hearing John, my buddy, sing it, told him about John's brain tumor and a little of the history I knew. And while I was asking him for permission to play his song on the show, and not only did he get back to me within a couple days and tell me he loved what we were doing here at Brain Injury Radio and that I was welcome to play his song on the radio, but since I had his email, I sent him that song I just played for you by John, and I've seen a lot of miracles happen in my life, and you just never know. A lot of John's bills are mounting with this tumor he's fighting, and if you think that song is as cool as I do, then hopefully Gary Nicholson will think so too. But in the meantime, I really want to thank Gary Nicholson, because I know this is a song that we can all relate to. And even the title. But I was amazed that this man called me back, that he was so sweet. He was so receptive about what we're doing. And I'm going to put in the chat room both his website and his Facebook page. And if you guys happen to be on Facebook listening, you might want to go to, of course, you'd be at www.facebook.com/ Gary Nicholson Music. And that's GaryNicholsonMusic. Gary Nicholson Music. And if you would, you might just tell him, if you like this song I'm going to play, thank him for letting Kim play his song on Brain Injury Radio, and let him know we appreciate him opening up his work to us. And the name of Gary's song is, boy, bet you can't relate to this, Good Days, Bad Days, by Gary.
Everybody wants to know how I get along in these dark days since you've been gone. Sometimes I'm fine, sometimes I'm dying, stumbling through one step at a time. I have the nights are all the
By Gary Nicholson. So check him out at GaryNicholson.com. It'll show you his music is available in all the usual haunts, iTunes, Amazon, and or check him out on Facebook, /Gary Nicholson Music. And thank him for letting Kim play his song on Brain Injury Radio. We like to let them know we appreciate them, and they're appreciating us. So area code 202, I think I know who this is. Is this our new favorite buddy, Allie?
Yes. Hi, Kim. How are you?
Pretty good.
Can you hear me?
Yes,
oh, okay.
I can. I was thinking about the answer. I was thinking of the canned answer of fine, and I'm trying to be more honest. And I'm not exactly fine. I think I might have mentioned last night that my little 93-year-old grandma, who's really probably in better health than you and I, fell the night before last and broke her clavicle. And she's in the hospital in a lot of pain and going to have to go to rehab for a while before she'll be able to go back to her independent living apartment. And that was a new thing for her, too. And my dad's got Parkinson's, and he's had a couple of rough days. And we went from having that beautiful weekend. I thought the convertible days were long gone, but we had a beautiful, beautiful weekend, my husband and I. And then, oh, my God, I got up Monday morning. It was raining. It was cold. All my war wounds were in pain. I heard about my poor Nana and then talked to my mom about my dad. And I've really been feeling down, but one way that I can get my mind off myself is by helping others. So it's a blessing tonight that I was able to do the show. So how are you doing?
Well, you know, it's one of those things where I too am embracing greater authenticity with regard to challenging myself to, when it's appropriate, push back from the canned responses and be honest, because I feel that part of healing and alleviating that soul ache or whatever the case may be, is to shed light on it and to expose it to the air and not keep it all covered so that the sore festers, you know, and just being honest with whatever is so seems, for me anyway, seems to lend itself to lifting that mood. So I, too, am in a space where it's not great, but I'm continuing to remain optimistic and forge ahead. I just wanted to make sure that you saw me and had my mic open because I wanted to participate in the conversation. So I don't have a whole lot to say other than this is a great show, and I really appreciate you, Kim. And that song really speaks to my spirit. The one, the Guardian Angel song.
Yes, me too.
By Leah, what's her last name, Leah West.
Leah,
yeah. West, yeah. And I was really surprised. I know the words. I know the lyrics to the song, but I love that song, and I'm going to gift my sister with it for Mother's Day because she's a phenomenal mom, and anyone who has a guardian angel and a mother is quite blessed, and I want to make sure that she colors herself as such, and I think that's a beautiful tribute to any mother who's that dedicated. And it's just, I appreciate that song. It does so much for me every time I hear it.
You know,
very
it's
nurturing.
Kind of, it is, and when mm-hmm. I first, that's my very first song I got, and I got it when I was making the trailer for my book is when I discovered it. And so mm-hmm. Leah, technically, was my first indie artist. But, you know, when I heard it, aside from the literal mother, which I think that's a beautiful mm-hmm. gift that your sister's going to really appreciate. But, you know, it's kind of funny. I've got a, I don't know, maybe it's just the way I think. You know, there's always the literal, and then when you've got a mind that goes like mine, one of the ways that I interpreted that song was, you know, when I think of God as I understand him or whatever anybody wants to call, hopefully there's not, well, I do know there's a lot of people out there that believe they are the higher power, and those people are often rudely, you know, awakened in some way when they find out that that's not the truth. But I'm just going to say that this is what I call it, and I whatever anybody else mm-hmm. calls it. But anyway, I think, mm-hmm. you know, traditionally a lot of people thought of God because we'd see the pictures of a man with a long beard and flowing robes, and so we tend to think of God as a male presence. And I had a mini spiritual awakening when I heard that song, putting together my trailer for my book, and I saw the feminine side of God.
Oh, yeah.
My understanding. And that's
absolutely
what that song has symbolized for me, is a kind of spirituality in the feminine mm-hmm. sense that gives the yin and the yang and the balance, mm-hmm. which is mm-hmm. what I'm always seeking in my life, but also expanded my consciousness of the God of my understanding. So that song to me has represented the feminine part of spirituality, as well as the literal part of being a mother of your children, but the mother of all of the children. Mm-hmm. And that's brought mm-hmm. me an interesting dimension, a comforting dimension mm-hmm. To my spirituality. So, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. She did a good job.
She sure did. She sure did. I'm going to contact her and just let her know how much I appreciate her. I think, as a matter of fact, she may have posted something on her website, because I remember one night I was listening to it, and like I said, to me, it's very nurturing and on a soul level, and you mentioned comforting, and it is that. And I, too, see it beyond just the mere parameters of, well, they're talking about a child who was in heaven who was sent to its mommy, but I mm-hmm. see God as both masculine and feminine, also the yin and the yang. I'm big into that, and I think our spirituality mirrors one another, and I would love to talk with you about that some other time. However, I see God as being the ultimate creator, and women create, you know, women create. So that's the feminine nature of God made manifest, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too. And yeah, you got her website for anybody else out there. It's leahwest.com, LEAHWEST.com. Again, if you're on Facebook, you know that you're at facebook.com, but then you forward slash, let me grab my note, half of them, okay, it's just Leah West. So, Facebook.com/LeahWest. And you can also private message her there if you happen to be out there. I know a lot of our listeners listen from Facebook. I don't know how to do that. I'm not that tech savvy where I can figure all of these things out. But I go in the old-fashioned way, but I do know we have a lot of listeners that are out there on Facebook. So I always give you the information, both for the websites and the Facebook pages, so that you can thank them and be sure to tell them you heard it on Kim's show on Brain Injury Radio, because that'll keep them coming.
And Kim, I also wanted to thank you for the list that you shared about different aspects of, I can't remember how you phrased it, but you talked about the cognitive, the physical, and the something else, the
emotional.
Yes. What was that again? I'm going to check that out.
It's called, yeah, and I don't know, you got my email, don't you? You got my email?
No.
We'll figure out a way to.
BIANE.org.
Well, one thing that you can do is my own website is inaflash.org, inaflash.org, inaflash.org. And if you go to that, there's a little tab that says contact author, and that'll send an email directly to me. So if you want to connect with me, I'm not going to say your last name or do anything on the air, but that's a way that you can connect with me, and then we'll be able to find each other, and I can email you this. And what it was called is The Consequences of Brain Injury, and that included cognitive, physical, and emotional. And, yeah, it's one sheet, clean, bullet points, and I think it would be a wonderful idea if people were to, you know, give that to their doctor. Yeah, take it to their doctor.
Definitely. And, I'm going to do the same. And you charge us with a few things that I think we all could rise to with regard to supporting ourselves better in a more holistic fashion and more spot on, because it's almost like the itch that can't be scratched because you're not really pinpointing the location. And what I find often is a challenge around articulating precisely what's going on. And because of the professionals that I see, the service providers not really getting my brand of how my brain injury consequences are showing up, they're scratching all around it. It feels good because my back is being scratched, but they're not hitting the spot. And with this list, I'm looking forward to being able to shed greater light on the specifics of how it is I'm struggling, how it is I'm being challenged. And I mentioned some things last night, and they don't go away just because tomorrow is a new day and just because you sat in front of someone and talked for an hour or 50 minutes or however long. And I'm looking forward with greater hope and anticipation and expectation of being able to more closely scratch that itch. So thank you for providing the information.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I got to thinking about it, and I thought, you know, a lot of us do take it for granted because we've had symptoms for, you know, in my case, 18 years, I've had symptoms I've been trying to tell people about who either haven't believed me or just haven't had the capacity to validate it. And there was a point in time where I just stopped talking, you know, I just stopped talking about it. And so, you know, suffer alone with it. And I went through the stage where I was pill pelted, you know, by the traditional medical community.
Sure.
And that caused me more. It didn't fix the problems I was complaining about, but it gave me new problems like gastro, you know, some eating out of my stomach lining and that sort of stuff. And then I started doing some more alternative things, and that worked out nicely. But the point of the matter is, you know, on the old scale of 1 to 10, you know, for 18 years, I've been waking up with some kind of pain that is a residual from probably scar tissue. Yeah, from the surgery that I had. And so I think it's, you know, if somebody new to, and it made me think of it, because another thing I want to say real quick is DJ's guest on Monday was Melissa, and tomorrow she's going to be going in for her angiogram. She just found out that she has a brain aneurysm, and it was an accidental find out, because she was having trouble, like, with, you know, feeling like you got water on your ears and like you got an ENT problem. And so she went to that doctor, and they did x-rays, and they happened to find an aneurysm. And she was a guest on DJ's show, and it's kind of hard to talk that soon in the game, you know, because you just got this shocking news and you don't know what's going to be in front of you. The protocol for an aneurysm right now is if it's a certain size or under, they adopt a wait and see attitude, because brain surgery in and of itself is dangerous. And so I guess the opinion, and, you know, and medical protocol changes all the time, but it changed from when I went through it. But, you know, she's going to be getting the angiogram tomorrow, and that's going to tell her whether she's going to need to go forward and have brain surgery, or whether they'll be waiting and seeing, which, when you know you got a potential time bomb in your head, that's not a Sunday picnic, and neither is the brain surgery. So my prayers are going up for Melissa tonight for the best possible outcome tomorrow.
Absolutely. Thank you. I appreciate you sharing that. And you know what, Kim, as you shared that, and I had requested last night, I think there's such power in prayer. And not everyone is a believer, and not everyone is a believer in the same thing. But I think for those of us who do believe in a higher power, whatever it is we call that power, I think it's important for us to lift one another up in prayer, because there's an amplification aspect to you've heard the scripture, wherever two or more are gathered, there I am in the midst. But
yes.
In addition to that, just there is no, you've heard about the power of a praying grandmother, for example, you know, just to have intercessory prayer. You don't even have to believe yourself, but to have people praying on your behalf, I know for a fact, moves mountains in and of itself. And I think it's important for us to also support one another to the extent that we can, even spiritually. So for those who don't believe, that's fine. You know, God bless you just the same. But I think we need to lift one another up, because all of us, even though we may regard ourselves as survivors or thrivers or still finding our way, we still need to know that we're not necessarily out of the dark, and we can have even darker days ahead. And when those days hit, it can be very daunting to attempt to even tackle the task of wrapping our arms and our brains around it, but it's very frightening. And I know for myself, as you mentioned, with that acronym of HALT, and given other things such as sleep deprivation and whatever the case may be, our symptoms are exacerbated, it makes it that much more difficult to arm ourselves with the necessary munitions to I don't like the word fight because of the negative connotation, but to address successfully whatever the challenge is before us. And so I think that we can support one another in that way too, just to bolster the outcome, to embolden the outcome.
Yeah, I agree. And I think so too, that just like we're wanting, feeling like the only way we're going to make an impact in the brain injury community is by bringing a lot of voices together, I think that's what happened. That's the macro way of doing that is by what you said, the voices of prayer. I believe in the power of prayer too. And it's not that God isn't paying attention to one or two. It's just, you know, when a lot of people gather, and I feel like it makes a difference too. I talk about it in my book. I was blessed that a lot of people were spending all those hours in the waiting room when I was having my surgery praying, and I had even had last rites by both a priest, and I'm not Catholic, a friend, a priest, and a generic man of the cloth, let's say. And, you know, everybody, you know, they were praying to a full crowd for hours. And then I had, it made me feel really good that a lot of people told me after that they had me on their prayer wheel or their prayer chain, or it was comforting to know even that people cared enough to bring me into a group and to talk to God about me, you know,
that's
to care.
Powerful. Very beautiful. Wow.
I think so too. I felt
that's
so.
Big.
Too.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like other people out there to know that you might not know, you know, like when people would tell me I was on a prayer chain or a prayer wheel or whatever, they mentioned it, but I didn't know who the rest of those people were, the nameless, faceless people that were praying for me. But to know that they cared, you know, to do it, it's a humbling yet comforting thing. And I don't think it's hard to poke holes in that. You can believe it or not believe it, but for the people that it makes a difference to in their heart, in their soul, in their emotions, there's not a downside that I can see.
And it's been said that there are no atheists in the foxhole, so I can't imagine anyone turning away someone wanting to pray for them when they're facing one of their darkest nights, you know. And so I just wanted to put that out there. But thank you for sharing that. I need to get your book. I've been saying that I keep forgetting to remember to actually place the order to get it. But you've got a tremendous story. I hear snippets of it every now and again. This is my first time hearing about your situation being so relatively grave, or, you know, somewhat grave, that you even had a last rite ceremony. That's really, I don't know, that takes my breath away just to even think of that. That's incredible. Wow.
Well, we all have our stories, you know, of how and I feel that same way about, you know, hearing about other people's stories. We're just we're really blessed, and we've given, you know, when you think about the gift of life in the first place, and I think about it because I tried, and not hard enough to go get intercession, but I don't happen to have children, and so what was my point about that?
Not human children anyway.
No,
do
I don't. I do. I have four furry children and one with feathers. Yeah, four dogs, four dogs and a bird, and those are my kids. But anyway, I guess we just left off someplace on prayer and it being powerful and just knowing that people were coming together
mm-hmm.
on your behalf, you know, and that's, about the book. Yeah. You know, it's funny, people ask me what my book is about, you know, when people hear that I've written one, not around here,
mm-hmm.
obviously, but, you know, I can't say, well, anyway, my short answer is that it's about God and miracles, because I could tell you, and it is just a memoir over a short period around my aneurysm. It's not an autobiography of my life story. It's really just about this story. I had a near-death experience when I was in a coma, and some things happened that were miraculous later in the story, and it's such a marvel to me that if I would have written it sooner, that God had a plan through the whole thing. The fact that I journaled a lot of it back in 95 when it happened and then tucked the notes away, but that the opportunity, when it arose, there was no denying it, and sometime I'll go into the details on that, but there was a string of details that made it so obvious. It was like drawing me a picture that this was the time, you know, that, mm-hmm. that you tell your story instead of, you know, you've got to come out of the silence now. Now it's time to come out of the silence and tell your story, because there's, now I understand, a greater mission or an extended mission, which was coming to the radio. If I wouldn't have written the book, it wouldn't have led to the radio. It wouldn't have mm-hmm. led to me getting to meet such great people like you and the guests and, you know, the other regulars and the other members of the audience who mm-hmm. come in and are interested in this. I think a lot of us felt really alone in this journey, and to have a forum that goes worldwide and into the archive, nobody's ever got to be in that place alone again unless they choose to.
Mhm. 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 That's awesome. And Kim, even before you used the word miraculous, as I was sitting here, I didn't want to cut you off, I was thinking, is nothing more than just to be reminded that miracles do occur. You know, you mentioned,
yes.
Well, I've heard other stories that were, you know, equally compelling or whatever the case may be. To me, that's very inspiring, just to shed light on the fact that if we step back, or if I step back and challenge myself to look at the grander scope of things as opposed to just focusing on my own life and my own challenges, it helps me see the greater field of possibilities that, wow, well, if that happened for Kim, even though I'm struggling, even though I'm really, you know, kind of challenged right now, I mean, it lends itself to greater hope that even greater things can still happen for me down the line and for anyone else listening to the story. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And I wouldn't have believed it. I was kind of a skeptic, you know, kind of mad. You know, we go through the grieving process
mm-hmm.
when our life changes during any passage of our life or one of these facing our mortality technicalities, you know, at a premature age. You know, then we go through, you know, a period where we're kind of angry, you know, about it. And it's just a natural part of the process, you know, going
mm-hmm.
through. But, you know, I think if you keep another acronym, well, two other acronyms I can toss in there
mm-hmm.
from what comments you've made. And mm-hmm. one is when we were talking about a greater spirit, an acronym I have that gets in the way. Sometimes I can
ego.
Be my own worst enemy. Ego, easing
uh-huh.
God out.
Editing
yeah.
God out. I knew you were going to say that one. I love that.
Yep, easing
I
God out. And let's see, the other one was, let's see, we had Halt, Easing God Out. I had another one. Well, actually, this one, this isn't the one I was trying to think of when you guessed ego. I can't believe you did that. But the on that sheet we were talking about on the emotional part of it, and we were talking about trying to be more genuine and honest instead of giving canned answers, but not necessarily explaining our life story. Someone might not have cared that much. They were just saying, how are you? You know, they didn't really want us to tell them, you know. So there's some balance between, you know, that us being true to ourselves, I guess, but not necessarily telling more than they were asking. But another one, and I won't say the one word, but you know, the word fine, everybody asks you, you know, so how you doing today? Fine. And I was laughing because somebody told me, can you hear me?
Hello.
Are you not able to hear me?
I can hear you now. I couldn't hear anything until you just asked, were you not able to hear me?
Oh, gosh, thank goodness. I just bent over. I didn't even mute or anything. Oh, my God. Must be Martians going by. Anyway, on that fine, I started laughing sardonically at it one day because I remember a long time ago somebody telling me the acronym for fine when you're being dishonest is freaking insecure, neurotic, and emotional.
What? Wow.
And you can paraphrase that in the way that I actually heard it, but, you know, we'll just say that. Yep. Freaking insecure, neurotic, and emotional. And I thought, yeah, that's the fine I've lied about from time to time. I might have been being honest after all, you know. Oh, how? That was my levity for the moment. But going back to the other one, only because it popped back in my mind after ego, and, you know, again, my show's called Recovery Now, so I have a lot of recovery tools like that because my memory was bad. So I clung on to these acronyms. But when you were talking about authenticity, you know, I talk about the how of recovery, and the how is honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. And if you're going to be angry and go through that natural grief process, then, you know, you can say fine and just fluff people off. You can just not talk about what's going on with you. But I heard once early in recovery that we're only as sick as our secrets. And I know that I pretended for a long time and wasn't completely honest and said fine a lot, you know, and I didn't want to be brain injured, you know. I didn't want to have deficits. I wanted to tick like I ticked before, the one who was on the dean's list, you know, the one who was the president of a 600, 700 member professional organization, a model. I wanted to be what I had been before, and that was, you know, that wasn't going to happen. So that cut, you know, that was the open-mindedness, and then the willingness, I think, is what we try to motivate people to do by taking positive action, because that's a time where you can sink into a deep hole. The deeper you go, the harder it is to dig out of it. And as long as you got a second chance at being born again in this new life, all it meant was is when we came back in, back onto the game board, we came onto a different game board, and we just have to learn our way around, which means willingness, willing to come out of our comfort level and try new things and trust that there's a reason that we're still here, and not let it stop us from trying, because the object isn't being, like, say writing a book. the object of that isn't to be on the New York Times bestseller list. It isn't to make money if you're not famous or connected. So what it's about is sharing a message that you're compelled to share. And I don't think it's just from yourself. I think it's a spiritual need or yearning or calling for you to share a message that you've learned. And that's the only reason. And it's funny because I have people ask me all the time, you know, they're wanting, they've written a book and they have the expectation that they need to know the magic answer to take that to the New York Times bestseller list, you know, and they'll ask me about it and I'll say, you know what, people that are supposed to hear your message are going to.
You will hear it. Exactly.
And the rest of it might have been an unrealistic expectation on your part.
No, I agree. That's very true. You never know the intended outlet. You know, we never know the intended purpose. And sometimes it's just for our own cathartic purpose of getting our story out. It's very healing. But I don't know. You never know, but it would never be in vain no matter what the outcome, because I'm a firm believer. One of my favorite quotes is by Rodin, and it's nothing is a waste of time if you use the experience wisely.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. That, you know, that just means you try, and it's not to be the best at or to rate whether you failed or succeeded, to judge, I mean, whether it's a failure. You know, I think not judging yourself is really important, and just knowing that it was about the trying. It was about the taking the action, not the outcome. The efforts are ours. The results are the universe's, you know. That's not necessarily even our business. The part that's our business.
I was thinking the same thing. Yes.
Yeah. Our business is to try. The results of it really aren't our business. It's going to shake down the way it's supposed to. And, you know, we got the illusion of a little bit of control. But I don't believe that it's about control. I believe it's about the amount of effort that we're supposed to take to get our message to the people who are supposed to hear it. And that isn't necessarily going to be in the New York Times bestseller list. You know, you might sell, I don't know, how many books and X amount get that message. But then that message is imprinted into their soul because they heard it when they needed it. And and so they remember it, and it's a kernel, not necessarily the whole book, but maybe something that they read in it that is relatable to them, and then that's imprinted, and they pass that on to other people in their life in different manifestations. But it was a tool, you know, it was a tool that made a journey that was carried by a number of people along the way. So,
I agree. A tool and almost like a bridge over troubled waters, you know. Sometimes we are only in need of a ferry to get us from point A to point B, but we've got this raging river in between us, you know. And so I think it's important to be resourceful and to avail ourselves to any number of resources that are out there, and to read a personal account of someone else's experience that closely mirrors my own makes all the difference, because oftentimes we do feel so alone. And so I'm just very grateful for this resource of Brain Injury Radio and for hosts such as you with such fresh and enlightening perspectives to share on challenges that we each face, some of us more uniquely than others. But what I find particularly interesting is that even though I'm active in my local support groups, we don't talk about this kind of stuff. And I think very often the persons attracted to this type of format are those who are seeking outside of the proverbial box for resources and for answers and for support. So I'm just grateful. Yeah. Thank you. One more acronym to share, and I'm going to let someone else get on the mic if they're interested. An acronym that I really like for God is good orderly direction.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that helps center us.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that makes it non-religious or non-churchy or non-spiritual for those who kind of recoil at the very thought of someone talking about the traditional God, you know. So good orderly direction can be something that we seek at any given time. Who wouldn't want good orderly direction?
I think so, too. And I think one thing I want to clarify for the audience, and you and I just met, you know, we don't know each
mm-hmm.
other like that, but
sure.
We're not talking about, I think a lot of people don't have a distinction between religiosity and spirituality. And
mm-hmm.
what we're talking about is spirituality. You haven't
mm-hmm.
heard us once mention religiosity or dogma that you find in organized religion, which is not to say we're for or against it, but we're talking
mm-hmm.
about an elemental thing called spirituality that is a culmination of the spiritual journey that you take and that you seek. And in my case, it's been in some unconventional ways and in a lot of different ways. So I
mm-hmm.
wasn't just brought
mm-hmm.
up in one, way to think. My need, to be honest with you, my spiritual
mm-hmm.
need put me on a quest, just like some people might try different medications out of desperation that their doctors will give out. Other people will go quite a way down some alternative roads, not only in medicine, but in spirituality, because I think when we face our mortality or when something brings us to our knees and we don't feel
mm-hmm.
like we have the strength to handle it on our own, we're able to dial direct. We don't have to show up on a certain day or put
mm-hmm.
a certain amount in the plate,
mm-hmm.
or anything like that, to just be able to dial direct
mm-hmm.
into that energy that helps
mm-hmm.
see us through and navigate the waters that are difficult. And I think a lot of times God speaks through other people, and that's why I like to have venues like
sure.
this to get the message.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So that's pretty cool. Thank you.
It is. You're welcome.
I'm going to walk in and look. We're probably down to a short time, and maybe I'll just play some music out. I think it's been a really good conversation. I appreciated Peggy coming on, and there weren't as many people around tonight, and I think that it was like, who cares what Nebraska is doing? And really what my point was the challenges, and there were a couple different challenges, and one of them is look and see if we all want to make a collective change. A couple things we can do that are easy is Google whether we have a state brain injury association or alliance. Look and see what kind of stuff they're doing. And I guarantee you they probably don't have an in-depth or widespread peer-to-peer element in them. And since that's an integral part of recovery, as far as I'm concerned, as a brain injury survivor, and they're playing to our crowd, then I would challenge everybody to look at your state and call them. I understand fear of rejection and call reluctance, but you know, it's a yes or no deal, you know, and a lot of them may not even know it exists. Peggy didn't know, but when she found out, she was very receptive. And again, the national president of the Brain Injury Association, and be sure to use that when you call your state, that Susan Connor, the national president, has put Brain Injury Radio on their website. And if a little state like Nebraska can do it, then I'd like to see every state out there doing it. But the only way that's going to happen is if you guys make the phone call, you know, and if your association isn't doing that already, make the suggestion. And I tossed a couple other, but that's kind of what that was about, is challenging people to see. First of all, I was testing, you know, because as I mentioned early in the show, when I first found out they existed, I wrote to them and didn't get any response from their last executive director. And so I had no expectation. Well, I had an expectation that, you know, I wasn't going to be hearing from them like a few other places. And Peggy, you know, is just a couple of months into her new job as the executive director and as pliant at a time where it couldn't be a better time with the veterans and the NFL to get our challenge, dilemma, situation, whatever you want to call it, out there, that if we're ever going to make a difference or care to try to make a difference, then these are a couple challenges that are out there that can help us do it. Making one phone call, doing a Google, and then making one phone call to make sure that peer-to-peer support is there for everybody. And one way of doing that, if somebody has a brain injury, they're going to look up like that type of thing, you know, a brain injury association. So, you know, that's a challenge. And another one was learning what your state is doing. And, and the third one was the protocol of Brent's. And that's going to be showing up. He's been on a lot of shows, and writing to DJ is one way, but I'm going to have the PDF on my desktop, and I'll also be able to send that out. But, you know, heart attack and stroke, there's a lot of maladies out there that do have a protocol for first responders and emergency rooms, and brain injury does not. So Brent has come up with this, and I think the other thing that we want to do is, while we've got them on the hook, asking them to put a brain injury radio link on, that you'd also like to email them a copy of the protocol and see if they have an interest in that. And places like your state health and human services. Those are, you know, government organizations that are going to help lobby for those kind of things. So I guess the challenge out there tonight was to take a more proactive approach, doing some little things. They're not hard things, you know. Just to try to help bring all those voices together. So it was a mistake if people thought it was just about Nebraska's Brain Injury Association. It was to test to see if they'd show up for me, number one. And I was really happy and grateful that they did. And the other one was just to get some ideas for people, you know, to hear what's going on in other associations, so that if people do decide to get proactive, they can get an idea of what other states are doing. So anyway, I hope word gets out and that a lot of people, you know, a lot more people listen to the show and the archive. And I really think the second part of the show after Peggy has been really good, and it's been the discourse between you and I. So I really appreciate, mm-hmm. Allie. I think there's a lot of things that, you know, both of us have confessed to struggling a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and mm-hmm. like you said, where two people meet, okay, we've been honest and talked about the fact that we're struggling, but we've also been,
mm-hmm.
and I talked about this last night on Les Paul's show, that
mm-hmm.
that we really, in recovery, we need to try to live in the solution, not the problem,
sure.
which
That's
doesn't
right.
mean we lie or bury the problem. Okay, we take it out
mm-hmm.
and look at it, but we just look at it. We don't stare at it and put it in a clenched grip. We're just admitting that it's there and then trying our hardest to live in the solution by taking
mm-hmm.
positive action, like sharing with someone else. And
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
I think this has been a really good example of a productive way of sharing with another survivor, and a very good example of what this whole thing is supposed to be about. So
mm-hmm.
I
mm-hmm.
really, and we didn't talk about this ahead of time, audience. It's it was the plan, you know, it was the plan beyond us. So I think that's
right.
really awesome, and I want to thank you for participating and talking with me about it.
You're welcome, Kim. Thank you. And this is peer support personified, you know. And so this is peer support in action. I know I feel lighter. I feel better. I feel more encouraged. I feel more inspired. And I feel more capable. And so I know tomorrow is going to be a better day because I had an opportunity to share in a safe space with someone who gets it. So thank you for providing that vehicle, you know.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I see that we are down to like 5 minutes, so I'm going to tell you good night, and I'll be seeing you real soon. And thank you, and I'm just going to play us an outro song out. So thank you, Allie. Again, I want to thank my guest tonight, Peggy Reiser, the executive director of Brain Injury of Nebraska. I want to thank Lash Publishing for sponsoring Recovery Now. And who else do I want to thank? All kinds of people. And I hear, geez, we're only down to 90 seconds. So once again, the clock is kind of off here. And so what I want to do, I'm trying to look really hard. I've got 60 seconds, and I actually have something that's 51 seconds if I can find it. Otherwise, I'm just going to be talking it down to that, I guess. Okay, I've got it, 51 seconds. I know we played it earlier, but again, I'm going to leave you with the thought when you go to sleep tonight that we all have a guardian angel, and we'll play that out for 50 seconds. Thank you, everyone, for being here tonight. Good night.
God replies, yes, it's your time to leave. But don't you worry, you won't be there alone. You see, there's someone who's been waiting for you.